And we're going to move through this and do a couple of things, being that you're all in seats. And we're going to want to move Jim and Margaret to a table. Could you just move over to the table? Let's go back there with Jim and Jim and John. There you go. So as they move, here it comes. So some days Paul said to Barnabas, "Let us return and visit the brothers and the sisters in every city in which we proclaimed the word of the Lord and how they are." So the first missionary trip is over, and they've gone back to Antioch, which is in Turkey off the Orontes River. And so now there's a church there made up mostly of Gentiles, or the Goyim is who that would be. And so they say, well, hey, let's go back and see how everybody's doing. It's been about a year. So Barnabas wanted to take John, also called Mark, with them. Mark would be the mother or the son of one of the seven Marys in the New Testament. If you are confused as to every time you read it, their name is Mary, welcome to the club of those who are confused. But there is seven of them, and John Mark would be the son of one of those Marys. I believe that is the house in Jerusalem that they came for the Lord's Supper, that first thing at the Passover meal. I believe that was at Mary's house. And that would also be the house that when Peter is thrown in prison, that the church had gathered to pray. So you catch up with Mary a little bit, but here's John Mark. He's a young one. Mary would have servants, and so he's a little bit of a young man who was born with a golden spoon, so to speak. Anyway, so Barnabas wanted to take John, also called Mark, along with them, but Paul was not of that opinion, that they should not take along with them this man who had deserted them in Pamphylia and had not gone on with them into the work. Now it turned into a sharp disagreement. Imagine that, a church that has disagreements. Never happens here. That they separated from one another. Not only were they disagreeing, but because they weren't Quaker, they didn't know how to reason that out with each other. The Quakers didn't come along until later. Anyway, so they separated. Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed away to Cyprus. Cyprus, of course, would be where Barnabas is from. So he's going back to, you know, his relatives, probably where they eat Cyprus food, whatever that sounds like. But Paul chose Silas and left after being entrusted by the others to the grace of the Lord, and he was traveling through Syria, Cilicia, and strengthening the churches. So here's the first conversation, and you're going to kind of work the sermon yourself. What is going on here is that Mark made a mistake. How many of you have made mistakes?
No.
And the rest of you, you made mistakes, it's just you're not owning up to it. But that's okay. So he's made a mistake, and Paul is not interested in having him come with him. But Barnabas is. Barnabas, the nickname Bar meaning son of, Nabas meaning encouragement. So it's a contraction, Bar Nabas. He's an encourager. He's a mentor. He's okay with having people who make mistakes. So your first question as a table, and let's see, I picked on the eldest, so now I'm going to pick on somebody else. Whoever the eldest now says, you're going to be in charge of the table. So I need for you, the elder person, who's those elders? Raise your hand. Okay, now you pick somebody right now. Go ahead, anybody at your table. Okay, so that person is first. So you're first, and you can't get away from this. So who was the one when you screwed up? Who is the one that helped you through it? Who was your Barnabas? Mm-hmm. Who was the one that you ran to? Okay, there you go. Off you go. Mm-hmm.
As a
Now, once that first person is gone, the rest of you can tell who your Barnabas was. So the rest of you aren't off the hook. Keep going. But the person who just spoke gets to pick the next person.
Well, yeah, but in that year, so. No,
she's quiet. No, no, but she's quiet.
So there'll be time for the rest of you, so we're going to keep moving. So as the person who has been charged or asked to be the preacher here for however long, I thought I was going to be here for 3 weeks, and it's now been 10 years. So it's very interesting to come to Bethany. It kind of grows on you. But here's some things I would want you to understand. When you read the scriptures, you need to become a student of the scriptures. You need to find yourself learning. So there's a couple things that I would want you to have in your head. The first is to observe things. And the best way to observe would be taking you back into second grade and having you answer the interrogative questions of who, what, where, when, why. Very simple, but it really is helpful when you're trying to study the scriptures. So who was involved in this thing with Barnabas? There was Barnabas, there was Paul, there was Mark, there was Silas. Eventually you're going to find out there was Timothy. You're going to find out what's going on with the people you're reading about. So if you ever found yourself bored with reading the scriptures, this is a way to help you not be bored. It's helping you engage and learn things. The next part after observation is interpretation. What does that mean? And once you get to observation and you're starting to ask questions, right? Then out of the questions, you're going to start to look for answers. And that's where this thing gets really interesting to do. Anyway, so let's move on and hear what happens. Now, Paul also came to Derbe and Lystra, and there was a disciple there by the name of Timothy, whose mom was Jewish and whose dad was Greek. Mom was a believer, well spoken of by the brothers and sisters who were in Lystra and Iconium. Paul wanted this man to leave and go with him and took him to be circumcised because of the Jews who were in those parts, for they all knew that his dad was Greek. Now, while they were passing through the cities, they were delivering the ordinances for them to follow, which had been given to them by the apostles there in Jerusalem at the Jerusalem Council. That was last week. There was 4 admonitions for fellowship, right? Does anybody remember any of the 4? Okay, good. Nobody remembers it, so when I repeat it, I won't look so silly to myself. But here it was, they were told, right, not to eat strangled meat, not to drink of the blood, right? Anybody remember the other 2?
Abstain from fornication.
Abstain from fornication or sexual immorality, that kind of stuff. There's 1 more, anybody?
Nothing offered to idols.
Nothing to idols. And so as Paul is starting to go into these Gentile communities and people become believers. He is saying, do this so that you're not insulting one another. I was wandering around in, you're eventually going to come to Macedonia today. And one of the things in Macedonia at the time of Paul was, if somebody did this to you, your hand out in front of you, it's like giving somebody the bird. And so there are people around the world who are completely unaware of things that we do as Americans. Like we say, oh, hi, how you doing?
Right.
And if from that part of the world, they're looking at you like, they just gave me the five fingers. But there's all these things that we don't know that's a part of a culture. And so I'm trying to, at least as we wander through things, let you bump into the culture and see what that's like. So we got some apricots out there. And over in Greece, they'll take those apricots and they'll boil them down and then throw them into a blender, put them on a 9x12 sheet of a baking sheet, and it'll become a fruit roll-up. And that is one of the things that you can get them in apricot, you can get it in cherry or grape. And that's a weekly thing. So instead of getting Snickers or whatever it is you might like, you get some fruit roll-ups. But that's very Greek. Okay, so now let's look and see what happens. So the churches were being strengthened in their faith, and they were increasing in their number daily. Let me talk a little bit about us here. We continue to grow, and when churches grow, we go through this growth pattern, and last year we walked through this too, where you normalize, and then there's a storm, and then that church has to reform before they normalize. And I would say to all of us, you not only do that in a church setting, in a community of believers, but you probably have that in your own families, where you come together, you form, and then there's a storm, and then you've got to reform. You have to think your way through it. But notice, you've got to think your way through it. You've got to process that with each other. And then you normalize, and then it works. Don't run because of the storm. Stay there in it, right, and work through it. Okay, so here's what happens. They pass through Phrygia and Galatia, that's southern Turkey in the middle, and they were forbidden by the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, to speak a word in Asia. Now, Asia, of course, today, we're talking about things like China and Thailand. Here, they would be talking about Turkey. It was called Asia. And so Paul wants to go to Asia, and that would be, of course, where Ephesus is. So he's in the middle of what we know as Turkey, and he goes up a little north, and he turns to go west. And the Spirit says, nope, you ain't going there. So all of a sudden now Paul's frustrated. So then he says, how about if we go north and east? We'll go to this area called Bithynia. Well, Bithynia is on the coast of the Black Sea. If you look on it at a map, if you go across the Black Sea, you're in Crimea in the Ukraine. That's the part of the world that they are in right here. And the Spirit says, nope, I don't want you to go there either. How do you all do when your lives are being thwarted, all your ideas? What you believe you should do? Nope, can't do that. And there's disappointment. How do you wrestle with your disappointment? Second question for your tables, go for it. And the person who spoke last, who in this table's case, it was Rosie, she got to speak. Now she gets to pick who the next person will have to lead at her table. But whoever spoke at your table, they get to pick the next person. Go ahead. How do you deal with your disappointments?
We just work. We have
have a discussion.
Well, not just those stages where it's like denied. I'm upset.
So as you continue to start to think, another prompt might be, ever wanted one thing and you got something else? And then what did you do with that something else? Were you bitter that you didn't get what you wanted? And what we want to begin to think about as a church family is that a lot of times we don't get what we wanted. But God would say, you got what you needed. And are you okay with giving God giving you what you needed instead of what you wanted? And those are tough questions. I can't answer that for you. I just know that in most of our journeys, we all wrestle with what we wanted and then what we got. Okay, so now let's move on to this next one. In verse 10 of chapter 16, you start to meet somebody. Let's see what he says. It really starts in 9. And a vision appeared to Paul at night. A man from Macedonia was standing pleading with him and saying, come over to Macedonia and help us. And then if you were to bump down to 11, you'll see, and after they set sail from Troas, we ran a straight course. What you just did there is you just met Luke. Luke is the we. He's writing the book of Acts, and now all of a sudden he has joined this journey. One of the questions that always happens is, what do you do with new people when they join? And you need to know, just like I know, new people changes the pecking order in the chicken house. And some people are okay with new people, and other people, it threatens them. You know, they might step into their turf. And what I would have for all of you, all of us, is expand your tent. Stretch the pegs. Have it over all, so that all can share in what God is doing. God's doing a new thing. And what the new thing is, so we had Barnabas and Paul started a new missionary journey because Paul and Silas went on their way. That was the first thing. Then the second one was this, a new vision. No to Asia or Ephesus, no to Bithynia, but yes, over to Troas, which for those of you who do history, that's 10 miles south of Troy. If you've done a lot of history reading, that's where they are. And so Paul and Silas and Timothy and Luke, there's now 4 of them, get on a boat. It's about 160 miles across that part of the sea, which would be called the Aegean. Remember, you're in the Mediterranean. In the Mediterranean, as you go west to east, it starts out after Spain in that water. When you get near Italy, you're in what is called the Tyrrhenian Sea. When you cross over from Italy into Greece, that area of water is called the Adriatic. When you go from Greece over to Turkey, that area of water is called the Aegean. Paul is over there on the east side in Troas, which would be the coast of Turkey today, and he's going to go up to Macedonia, or a city called Neapolis, which means, as you all would all figure out, new city. Imagine that. N-E-opolis, new city. It's called Kavala today, and you can go there and sit on the beach and eat as many apricots as you want. Anyway, what happens here is that they have a fairly strong backwind. So when you're on a sailboat and the wind is at your back, what happens? You fly. So they make this 140-mile trip in 2 days. On the way back, it takes them 5 days to do the same trip. So they are moving very, very quickly. They stop at an island called Samothrace, which Thrace is right above it, so that's where you are in the world, but they're at the northern part of the Aegean Sea, going across. They hit this island. Next day they come across, and they came to this city. All right. So they are now in what would be called Macedonia. And for those of you who've lived in this part of Ohio all of your life, there is a Macedonia up in Cleveland. Where'd they get that name? From right here. This is where they got that name. So Paul comes to what is known as Macedonia. It wasn't known as Greece at that time. It was known as Macedonia. And Paul and his three other companions land, and they walk from Neapolis 10 miles to get up to where Philippi is. Philippi would be named after one of the Roman general kings, what have you, kind of person. That's why it's named Philippi. There would be an old gold mine there, which is why they have their roots there. The other thing that's interesting is that Rome would give their retired army people free land if they would go to Philippi. So it was full of retired Roman soldier type people. So they bring with them all of their food, their dress, and their language, but more importantly, they bring their law. This is all Roman law now, even though it's in Greece. So very fascinating to see what happens with Paul and his team. It's all because it's Roman. All right, so they land there, and Greece. So now let's think about Greece for a little bit. Greece would be known as as you come from the eastern side coming west, it would be known as the beginning of Europe. And that's true even today. It's the beginning of Europe. And so this is the first time the gospel or missionaries have come to Europe. And for those of you that have a European root, your faith comes from these people. What happens here, eventually some 2,000 years later, has affected you. This is the people where that root comes from. One of the things at Christmas we want to try to do is celebrate each other's ethnic roots. And so, without spilling the beans, we know of somebody who's German who's going to explain the Christmas tree. And no, the Christmas tree doesn't come from America. It's a German thing. And the other thing that's really fun about it is those Germans would put pickles on their tree.
My answer, putting pickles on a tree.
So if you like pickles on your sandwiches, you just go to your Christmas tree, I guess, and you pick it off and put it on. But really kind of fun. So if you have an ethnic root and you have some fun things that is part of the Christmas tradition, talk to us so that we can add that, so we can learn about each other's history. But here's some things that come out of Greece that you all may or may not be excited about. Greece. We have a number of philosophers. It would start with Socrates, then it go to Plato, then Aristotle. Socrates would have been the beginning, and he used this phrase called, an unexamined life is not worth living. And so Plato would use that phrase also, but it really has its roots. The quote actually comes from Socrates. Anyway, then we have Plato, and Plato would say for us, the measure of a man is what he does with power. Because you figure out if he's going to try to run over people with power. And just to make a comment politically, we have seen different political leaders use power well, and others who not so much. Plato would also this, and this is for our music friends in the crowd. He was a person who enjoyed music, but this is a quote from Plato. Music is a moral law. It gives soul to the universe, wings to the mind, flight to the imagination, and charm to life and everything. Isn't that fascinating? All those years ago. So here we basically now come to Aristotle. And Aristotle had this thing about excellence, and he would say, we are repeatedly what we do. Now think about your life. We are repeatedly what we do. Excellence then is not an act. It's a habit. Fascinating, isn't it? So as you reflect on your life, it is what you do consistently that will become a large part of your life. Then here comes another one, and I did use this other one a lot. This is the law of non-contradiction, and this can be a little confusing, but I want to give it to you because it is how we then process things in the scientific method. A is A and cannot be non-A at the same time. Was that confusing? Of course it is. So here it is. A door can't be open and closed at the same time. A cat cannot be a dog at the same time.
Sorry, Tina.
Does that make sense now? And so you roll that into how we think, and, you know, there's a tree outside. That tree is not a deer. It's a tree. That's what it is. And so it gives clarity to the way we think, but it also gives clarity in how we discuss things. In other words, our conversation isn't muddled or dirty. It's really clean. A equals A. And it can't be non-A at the same time. That's the law of non-contradiction. Another example of it is you cannot be in Wadsworth, Ohio, and England, London, at the same time. You're in one or you're in the other. Right? Pretty straightforward. But you'd be surprised at how many people confuse that. They want things to be something today and then something else tomorrow. And that's not how this works. That's not what God created. Anyway, all of those are Greek thinkers who've gone before us and they've given to us. Here's some other things that we have from our Greek forefathers. They gave us the idea of democracy. And so for those of you that are historian people, the understanding of how America functions, not how we want it to function, but the way it functions at its root. When you read the Constitution, those kinds of things, it's a democracy, and that's based in what they sorted out over in Greece over 2,000 years ago. Fascinating, isn't it? So we also get the Olympics. Any of you like Olympics? I watch them every time they come on. Then the idea of a marathon. Do I have any marathon runners here? I always thought they were confused. marathon runners. Now, I'll run to go get an ice cream cone, but I ain't running 26 miles. And then here's the crazy thing, and I don't know, maybe there's a couple of you that do this. How many of you love mathematics? Very good, very fun. See, my dad loved mathematics, but I'm like my mom.
I don't like that.
But all of that stuff has a Greek root. And for those of you who wonder, where did stuff come from? It's interesting when you do your homework and you go back and look at things and you realize, oh my goodness, some of this stuff has been around 2,000 years. Okay, so let's read this last part. So after setting sail from Troas, we ran a straight course to Samothrace, that's an island between what would be known as the northern part of Turkey. The sea is, of course, the Aegean. Halfway through is this island, and then on to Neapolis. From there to a city called Philippi, which is the leading city of the district of Macedonia. It's a Roman colony. And for those of you who keep track of your maps, you know that Thessalonica, or Thessalonians, you would know in your New Testament, is a letter to those people. That's actually the capital of this part of Greece. But Philippi was probably a leading city for any number of reasons. A Roman colony, and we were spending some days in the city, and on the Sabbath, which of course the Sabbath would be, so Friday night at dusk through the day, so there's Sabbath, we went outside the gate to a riverside where we were thinking that there would be a place of prayer. So Jewish people, oftentimes when there was no synagogue, and remember, a synagogue means that there's 10 men, 10 Jewish men. If you had 9 men, you did not have a synagogue. It is not a building. It's a gathering of 10 men. It can't be 9 and 1 woman. That's not how this works. Jews were very good at knowing the difference between men and women. A is A and cannot be non-A. She's either female, but she's female. That's the way it is. Anyway, so there was no synagogue in Philippi. And what it tells us is that they went down to the river to pray. And so about a mile and a half outside of Philippi, there's this river that you can go visit. It starts with a G. I think it's G-A-N-T-E-S, Gantes. And these Jewish women would go down there to pray. Well, Paul, who, when you start to follow him around in the New Testament, he always goes to a city and looks for the synagogue. And then he would present his case of building the gospel around Old Testament passages. Well, he couldn't do that here. There was no synagogue. So he gets up and probably gets his coffee, bagels, lox, whatever they have there to eat. And he goes and finds this river, goes down there, and here is these women who are praying. So Paul figures out that they're Jewish. And so he starts to explain what he understands of the gospel coming out of Old Testament passages. And one of the women, let's hear what it says. And we sat down and began speaking to the women who had assembled. Now I'm in 14. And a woman by the name of Lydia was listening, and she was a seller of purple fabrics from the city of Thyatira, and she was a worshiper of God. And the Lord opened her heart to respond to the things spoken by Paul. And when she and her household had been baptized, she urged us, saying, "If you have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come into my house and stay with us." And she prevailed upon them. Your first convert in Europe is Lydia. The first church in Europe is at Lydia's house. So for those of you who wrestle with having women in leadership, God uses whoever's willing to follow him. And in this case, in Philippi, it was this woman. It's really wonderful to think about. She was a seller of purple fabric. Let's see, do we have anybody with purple on today? Well, Annie has a little purple on today. The thing about purple...
My shirt has purple.
Oh, there you go, that's right. And there you go. It came from a shellfish. One drop came from it's called Murex, M-U-R-E-X, shellfish. And they would open up that shellfish and squeeze it, and they would get one drop of what would be used for as a purple dye. And purple, in the Roman culture, was the sign of, do you know?
Royalty.
And she was the seller of the purple dye and of those garments. Lydia was very affluent. She knew how to make a nickel. And she had figured out, this could be my business. This is how I can support myself and others around me. And so our first convert in Europe was a female who was a businesswoman who started the first church in Greece. Fascinating. So next week, what you're going to have, we're going to meet two other people next week. We're going to meet a woman who has the spirit of the python. Sounds like something straight out of Harry Potter, doesn't it? And it's a spirit of divination, but we'll let you read it so you can kind of catch up with her and then what happens. And then we meet the jailer who puts Paul and Silas in jail. And a fascinating story. So this early church has a businesswoman, a woman who's been possessed by basically the spirit of the python, and a jailer. And that's the beginnings of the church in Europe. Fascinating stuff. Let's sing one last song, and then we will finish our time. So, for those of you who wondered about the year of Jubilee, the year of Jubilee happened every 50 years in Israel. The crazy thing is that it's built into the very Mosaic law of their culture, and never once does Israel ever have a year of Jubilee. They never did what the Lord had asked, because what would happen is farmers would not farm. They would believe that God would provide for them, and it was too much for them to believe that God would act on their behalf. And I would say to you, when Paul and Silas and Timothy and Luke were sitting there in Troas and they got this admonition to go to Macedonia, someone in Macedonia said, come and help us. The word there, it actually says, and they immediately left. And that word immediately is euthos, euthos. And it means immediately. When you get a sense that God has asked you to do something, act on it immediately. Does that make sense for you all?
Amen.
Because all too often, we get this prompting of God to pray for someone, to go see someone, to do something, and then we second guess ourselves. And then we never get to have the privilege of realizing that God used us. Act immediately when God asks you to do something. Father, we are privileged to be able to be here today, to share communion, to learn the scriptures, and to realize that you continue to ask your family, the family of God, the church, to do things on your behalf so that others might know that you didn't leave us without help. And that help, His name is Jesus. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, and all of God's people together say,
Amen.
God bless you.